Talk about your path getting to CCWO, which you're only the fourth, I believe, right? Fourth CCWO in the Washington Guard history.
Yeah.
So what was your path to get there? Because not everyone has the same path. I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversation. And today I am joined by a very special guest. He's probably one of the most humble guys I have ever known in my Guard career. I'm very excited to have him on. CW5, Mark Brackett, the Chief Command Warrant Officer for the Washington Army National Guard, here to share his story, your career path to getting to the CCWO office, and pass along some of that guidance and wisdom that you have. You've been around a long time, Mark. I appreciate you coming on with us.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, and I'm glad to finally have opportunity to sit down and talk with you.
Yeah. So, intro, back on yourself, Chief.
So I'm a Washingtonian, born and raised here, and had a wonderful time living in the great Pacific Northwest, skiing, hiking, a lot of outdoor activities, grew up in a farming area, and just had great memories of the great Pacific Northwest. So I'm happy that I could continue my career here in the Washington National Guard.
When did you get into the military?
I was one of the delayed entry program people. So I joined in between my junior and senior year. So I joined in August of 1990, was in the delayed entry program, and then joined active duty, went to basic training on July.
You joined between junior and senior high school.
Yep.
So talk about that delayed entry. You basically went to basic training between those years, or did you wait until after you graduated?
No. So, I waited until after I graduated. So I just signed all the paperwork, went to MEPS, did all of that. And then in July, I went to the recruiting station, and I hopped on a bus up to MEPS. They did a final thing, swore in, and then took a bus out to wonderful Fort Leonard Wood for basic training.
Yes. I absolutely loved the Fort Leonard Wood summer. It was great. Same thing, right? I joined in December, and I didn't go to basic training until after college finals my freshman year on delayed entry. But yeah, I got on a bus, off the bus at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri in 2003. So it was fantastic times.
Yeah.
Very hot and humid time of year there.
It was definitely hot.
So talk about finishing. You're a combat engineer by trade. You were a 12 Bravo, correct?
No, I joined as a 76 Victor, which is a material and storage handling specialist, so a logistics field. And because that was the shortest term available, it was 2 years, 23 weeks, so 2 years plus training. So I thought, okay, well, let's see if it goes. I'll get a little bit of college money, figure out what I want to do, get to see the world, all the things they promised you in the brochure. That actually wasn't how it turned out to be until later on in my career. But a great, great experience. I joined and then went to airborne school or basic training, then went to airborne school, then went to AIT, and then went to my unit at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Yeah. So what brought you to the Washington Guard? I always like to ask the question of how did you learn about the Guard?
Yeah. After the time. So I guess I'll go back a couple. So I was at Leonard Wood was basic training. Then I went to Fort Bragg and then Fort Monmouth in New Jersey, which is, by the way, a phenomenal post. Unfortunately, it's closed down now, but that was an amazing post. About 45 minutes outside of New York City, so great place to travel and do things. I was ETSing from there. I didn't really have the greatest experience the last part of my active duty career. So I decided for options, and they said, hey, there's this Guard program. I'm like, well, what's the difference between the National Guard and the Reserves? And they basically kind of summed it up as, hey, the National Guard, it's like a hometown community thing. You go, you drill with all the people in your community. And then the Reserves is basically you can travel anywhere in the world. You can go to Italy. You can do all this, your unit assignments, but you move all the time. And I'm like, oh, well, I like the, I'm going to go back home. Let's do the hometown thing. So I joined the National Guard, and I started out in the 66 Aviation Brigade way back in the day, working for Star First Class Shimmerhorn, and learned so much. The difference between active duty and the Guard was amazing. 2 days a week, 1 week in the or 2 days 2 days a month, 2 weeks in the summer was absolutely amazing. So I learned a lot in the aviation community before on active duty. Before I got out, I was looking at doing flight school going to flight school. I didn't have enough time, and I wasn't really willing to re-enlist. So I moved on past that and Yeah, was in aviation for a while, then went. I was picked up for promotion, went to 96 Troop Command as their supply sergeant. So in that time, the Army converted, got rid of my MOS. So back in the day, I just got a letter from our PSNCO that basically says, you're MOS qualified in this MOS. So I worked in there, and that's how I got 92 Yankee as a supply MOS, along with a couple other MOSs along the way. Then from there, I was hired AGR back in the 96th TAC, from the 96th TAC, I went to the 66th Aviation Troop Command, 66th TAC.
Yeah. They switched names a few times in there.
Yes, back and forth. I was hired AGR as a PBO NCO, so I was there for a year, and then I was asked to go to a new unit that was standing up. It was a multi-compo unit, so it was basically an active-duty battalion. So the battalion headquarters, Alpha Company, and Charlie Company were all active-duty, and then the Bravo Company was the National Guard. So we were over here at JBLM at the 14th Combat Engineers. So right along with active-duty, Bravo Company was a guard element, and that was probably the best assignment that I had. I mean, everybody was great. The interactions we had with active duty was absolutely amazing. The people that we met, the exercises that we did, it was amazing. And it was always interesting to see how National Guard stacked up against active duty, which is always this great rivalry that we have between all of the compos. And it was amazing because we had construction engineers for our horizontal that did it Monday through Friday, and so it was really interesting to bring their expertise, sit down with the active component, and then build this great battalion together with industry standards that help benefit the Army mentality.
So talk about that. That's fascinating. And for those that have watched the podcast, no, I was a 12 Bravo when I was enlisted. Mm-hmm. I was actually a member of Bravo 14 for about a drill, and then I got sent up to Charlie 898 when the 81st Brigade was activated. But talk about how that worked, right? You had two active duty units and then a National Guard one. So would they come in on the drill weekends and train with you guys to do, like the whole battalion, or how did that work?
No, most of the time, for most of it, it was just us. And occasionally they would come in and we'd go to a range or something. It was really the AT period that we would really, come together as a battalion and do those large training exercises. But we would, through the collective training, we would build our skill set to that AT. And then we would, get after whatever the battalion commander wanted at that time to synchronize his organization and then move forward.
Yeah. I would imagine for the battalion commander there, he's like, well, these units are, active duty, but then I've got this guard thing here, and he's probably an active duty officer who was like, hey, I don't know what to do with them all the time because they don't always train the same way, or they train the same way, but they're not always doing the training at the same time. So,
yeah, I mean, there is, obviously, with every relationship, there's, good points and bad points to it. Them not being able to come down and get, your daily sit reps from them. We ended up getting like a active duty XO that was stationed with all the AGRs in the unit. And so we synchronized and did the the Cubs and the update briefs, along with the CUSR and all the reporting requirements together with that battalion.
So you were there during early OIF, OEF deployments, mm-hmm. and you deployed with the 14th Engineers.
Yes.
Talk about that experience.
Yeah, so we were activated in January of 2003. I think we were notified during our Christmas party, actually, that they were going to be sourced. So yeah, so in January 2003, we all came on orders, and it was that real engagement, or there's that debate of whether Turkey was going to allow us to come in through the north, because the battalion was activated, actually the triple nickel was activated as well. We were actually ended up being attached to 4th ID. So we were in that shuffle of whether we're going to come in through Turkey or come in through Kuwait, and we ended up going into Kuwait, staging in Kuwait. So we were on orders for a little over a month and a half before we figured that all out, and then left for theater.
Yeah. So deployed, come home. When did you finally decide, hey, I'm going to start making a transition over to warrant officer? When did that happen?
Yeah, so that was, I left there, went to the 205th, and that's really kind of where I got a little bit more exposure doing different things in the training environment. And then really that really transition was there at that senior level. So I was on the E8 list for promotion, and I was talking with CB5 Billington and my wife, Allison, and that was just the right time. You know, if I continued to stay in the ranks, you know, that pyramid was pretty steep there on the NCO side, going from E7 to E8. And then, you know, at that time, one sergeant major position that may or may not be available in the years to come. Mm-hmm. So I decided to make the transition to warrant officer at that point. And it was probably the second best decision I've ever made in my life. So.
Outside of marrying your wife, right?
Outside of marrying my wife,
that's always the best one. Yeah. So talk about you went through the traditional walks program. Talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, once I applied, I think, three different times before I was actually selected for a PBO position. I was beat out by amazing people, by the way. So, the competition at least at that time, was amazing. And looking at all the senior people that I was competing against, really kind of like forged in. I was like, okay, I really actually have to do more, read more, think more critically to be competitive for some of these positions that were coming out in the warrant officer community. So I was finally selected for 96th Troop Command as their PBO. And I went to down to Fort Rucker with that mindset. I'm like, okay, it's 38 days. I just need to get through 38 days. But I actually learned a lot. You build a lot of relationships. I remember Candidate Beam and myself would play this little game during like road guard. We both volunteered for road guards, and we every time that we went to the road, we would always race each other from the back of the formation, carrying our big briefcases and running to see who could get to the front of the formation to the road first. So all the little mental games that you develop to, you know, reduce the little stress level and, you know, keep things in perspective. But that was a great experience being down at Rucker.
So you kind of said it already, you kept applying for a PBO position.
Yeah.
What I don't think a lot of people realize is a lot of the time the warrant officer ranks on the AGR side get filled by people who are senior enlisted who just apply for a warrant officer position and then go through the course. And go become a warrant officer. Talk about that, because I feel like that is something that a lot of people just don't know about.
Yeah. So yeah, the application for, you know, AGR warrants, it's, you know, for MDAY, you know, you go through the qualification process, you get your PDP approved through your proponency saying that you're technically qualified, and then you just roll through WOCS. Hopefully you roll through WOCS. And then, you know, at the end of WOCS, you're PIN W1, and then you go to your WOBC. For AGRs, it's a little bit different because it's a competitive full-time position. Mm-hmm. So you interview, or back at that time, you would interview for a position. If you were selected, then you would go to WOCS, and then you would PIN W01. So now with a traditional program, we have the ability to withhold your commissioning for up to 5 years. And you get a certificate basically saying that you're eligible to PIN within 5 years, and then you just continue to compete that way. But again, most of the positions that we advertise on the AGR side, you can still be that senior enlisted position with a predetermination packet approved by a proponent and still be competitive as well.
Yeah, and there are times where an AGR will go through walks, they'll finish walks, mm-hmm. and then they'll just stay in their AGR position until a position opens up somewhere. Yeah. And that's pretty traditional too, I've seen.
It is. It works a little bit better for the AGR side just because the way that we hire AGRs is sometimes if you have somebody that's already gone through the WOCS, we don't have to send you through accelerated course either down at Fort Rucker or Alabama, so we actually can build that warrant officer faster, get him in to fill that critical position within that MSC or in that unit.
Yeah. So you've been the CCWO now for, gosh, I think 2 years almost?
Yeah, a little over about 2.5 years now.
Yeah, a little over 2.5 years, because Tim Gordon, I'm trying to remember, he came on a few months ago, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy to think that he's been gone, but once again, we were talking about time just kind of flies in the car. You never think about it. Talk about your path getting to CCWO, which you're only the fourth,
That's right.
Fourth CCWO in the Washington Guard history.
Yeah.
So what was your path to get there? Because not everyone has the same path.
No, I mean, and all the paths are a little bit different. You know, everybody has a unique background and has had different assignments. But, you know, obviously I started out as a PBO NCO, or sorry, as a PBO NCO when I was enlisted, and then a PBO in 96 Troop Command. I was there for 6 years, learned a lot. Those were really the formative years. And I had a lot of really good officers that, like, sat down and took a lot of their personal time. I remember, you know, sitting with several, you know, well into, you know, 7, 8 o'clock at night, just having that, those officership conversations of, you know, how you go from enlisted of doing to being an officer and leading and managing in a different way, you know, your, the personnel and your duties. So I always look back at those memories, sitting down, going through those, you know, leader professional development sessions with those 05s and 06s. That really helped me in my formative years kind of understand, hey, what was my place? Where am I? Where do I need to be? And I'd like to see us get back to a place where we have those, you know, honest heart-to-heart conversations. Hey, here's where I see your strengths. Here's where I see your weaknesses. This is where we need, you know, us as a warrant officer cohort, integrate a little bit better with the officer cohort to meet our needs. So I was there for about 6 years, and then I had the amazing ability to deploy, or opportunity, not ability, to deploy with the 96th Military Engagement Team. So I was selected for the deployment for that. So we went to Kuwait and then worked in the RSENT region. So I was able to go to Tajikistan, Jordan, Qatar, and Turkey.
So for those that don't know, this is, I think, 2013, correct?
Yeah, 2013. Yeah.
So that MET team was very high ranked. Yeah. I mean, you're talking 06s, 05 kind of things. Like, that mission itself was very unique too, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was great. So basically, we did mill-to-mill exchanges with our foreign partners within RSENT. And I mean, just simply as like, hey, if we had to get together and work together, this is how we do MDMP. What's your process for, you know, developing plans and solutions? And so we talk through our process, we would talk through their staff processes, and then we just kind of figure out how to work together. If, you know, we had to do an exercise, how do we communicate more effectively? How do we exchange information more effectively to meet the joint forces goals?
Yeah. Yeah. So after you get home, what's kind of the next thing after that?
Yeah. So, you know, I come back to mobilization station, and this is the part I love about our organization, is I get there, and Mike Monahan, at the time Major Monahan, walks out and hands me a piece of paper, and I look at it, and it's my transfer orders. So I'm not even back home yet, and I get my transfer orders. So I leave the 96 Troop Command, and I head to USBFO as the Property Management Branch Supervisor. And then I was there for about 6 years. It was a great experience as well, because I got to go through and help build that logistics plan for the transformation from the 81st Brigade from an ABCT to an SBC construct. So, I mean, a phenomenal opportunity. I mean, I had the cell phone for the Deputy G8 of HQDA. A lot of great relationships. I got a great mentorship from a lot of senior HQDA officials. And that's really where I started to understand the bigger strategic picture of how all the pieces of the Army fit together, how decisions are made, that strategic framework and communication across the directorates and staffs.
Yeah. So then, my brain's trying to work. So it's like about 2023, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think Chief Gordon was getting ready to retire.
Yep.
What was that process like, applying and not audition, but interviewing and competing for the Chief Warrant Officer position?
Yeah. So it was interesting. I wasn't really sure, you know, how it was going to go, or what that selection process was going to be, but it was fairly simple. Advertisement came out, listed, hey, this is the criteria for the first, you know, for potential selection. I met the criteria. A couple of people asked, like, hey, you should really apply. And I was on the fence for a little bit, and I put my application in and applied, selected for an interview, and. Yeah, so just it was, you know, I thought it was going to be this big foreboding thing, and I'd gone through and I'd memorized all of the, you know, especially on the aviation community with the warrant officer MOSs and ASIs, and so I was all prepared, and it was more of a not a question and answer, but a more scenario-based, hey, what do you think on this perspective? Where do you think the organization should go in this direction? So it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be prepared for.
Yeah. Obviously crushed.
Obviously I was selected for the position. It was a great honor to be selected for that as the fourth CCWO for the state of Washington.
Yeah, which, once again, it's crazy to think you're only the fourth person to ever hold this seat, because you would assume it's been around just as long as the organization's been around. But I think there's been a bigger emphasis on warrant officers probably in the past decade or two, in the professionalism of the organization and making sure warrant officers are looked at in the same way as like a commissioned officer or a senior enlisted. And I think it's phenomenal. I've always sat down with you and Chief Gordon and Chief Burgess prior to say, what can we do from public affairs to help promote the warrant officer ranks and making sure that you guys are getting what you need? So I'm excited to continue to work with you on that stuff. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I kind of want to do some jumping on some questions, because you've mentioned mentorship a lot. And I always like to give advice, you know, opportunity for folks to kind of pass down advice and things they would they would pass that next generation of soldiers, right? For you, you're at what, 35 years of service, almost 36 years of service. Myself, I'm almost at a quarter century. I love to just tell the next generation, this is how we did it. You know, you're obviously always going to make it better because you learned. So what are some of those things you would pass down to that next generation?
Yeah, so you know, this is great. You know, talking with the warrant officer candidates and gives me a lot of opportunity. But one of the things that you know, I talk to all the warrants, and it's really relevant for everyone, is everyone should have a senior enlisted mentor. You know, everyone should have a you know, a senior warrant officer mentor, and everyone would have, you know, a senior officer. And the reason I say that is because all three of them are going to give you a very different perspective on the organization, how they see the organization, the direction the organization is going. And unless you have the ability to have those mentors across all three of the officer enlisted and warrant officer, I don't think you have a holistic understanding of the organization. So I always recommend, you know, have those senior mentors where you can sit down and have honest conversations. And along with that, it's like when you choose your mentor, I've always found is if you don't trust that individual implicitly and explicitly, then you're not going to be able to have or be able to receive those honest conversations. So that trust and the ability to have those really hard conversations between your mentor and mentee, I think, is probably the most valuable thing that I found throughout my career.
Yeah. So one thing that I always kind of look, I had it with Cal Archer from the MI side. Mark Voigtlander and I kind of came up together when he first was looking at commission or being appointed as warrant officer. I currently live in a job in public affairs that does not have warrant officers, but I constantly push, and we've talked about it constantly, where I think PA warrant officers just make sense at the end of the day. Talk about the benefits of having that warrant officer in these kind of specific jobs that are very kind of niche, right? Like MI, PA, IO.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the officer fills, you know, a very specific role. I mean, we're technical experts. We manage the systems of systems that support unified land operations, right? So having those highly specified managers of systems is important for the continuity, because really, as you know, NCOs and officers change out, you know, 18 months to every 2 years, those warrant officers tend to have that longevity within that organization. So they're the holders of that institutional knowledge, best business practices, so they can, you know, continue to pass on that that knowledge and information as people come in and come out of the organizations.
Yeah, I just think it's highly important. Any other kind of advice, guidance, wisdom you want to pass along real quick?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the warrant officers, I love the acronym ICOLA. You know, warrant officers were integrators, communicators, operators, leaders.
Trying to remember what the A stands for. All
yes.
Good.
Sorry, advisors.
There you go.
Yeah.
ICOLA. That's a good one.
ICOLA.
I like that.
So, and that kind of really wraps up, you know, what we do for both our officers and our enlisted is the framework of how we meld into that. You know, pulling us into, you know, the staffing, pulling us into the, you know, the planning exercises to allow us to give you those systems and that technical expertise that you require to build that operations plan is important as well.
So this is another one of those questions. So while you've been in this seat, the Air Force and the Air National Guard has started the warrant officer program back up.
Yes.
Have you played any part in that with them?
Yeah, initially when it all started, Chief Nolan and I had sat down and we kind of talked over what the requirements is. Chief Rollins from the Army side, as one of our SF warrants, was actually helped them develop that first iteration of their board process to select the warrant officers, the initial airmen that were going to transition into the Air Force Warrant Officer Program as well. So we kind of helped formulated that plan and gave them some guidance from the Army side as they move forward. And as they've come through, I've reached out to them. I've talked with several of them, not all of them. They just had a deployment ceremony a week ago. So we have a few of our warrant officers on the air side that are headed out for a six-month deployment. So just kind of give them some advice and bring them in and just talk to them about really, you know, as a brand new cohort that hasn't existed in 66 years for all intent and purpose in the Air Force, is that critical role that they're going to play in developing themselves as those team leaders and how they go and represent their technical ability, not just, you know, right now it's all cyber and signal, just not their ability to achieve the mission, but the ability to build that cohesive team and collectively integrate and inform both the officer enlisted within the Air Force is critical for them at this time to build that relevancy and separate themselves from their former enlisted cohort.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love that you were able to do that because, yeah, I mean, it's been, you said 66 years at this point since the Air Force has had warrant officers. So they probably were dusting off some files and like, how do we actually do this? So, so let's talk outside the guard real quick. For anybody that knows you, I'm also the kind of the same way my wife says, kind of a tinkerer, always doing something, always have to be busy, always have a project. You are a phenomenal woodworker, but I also have seen some of the stuff you just make in general with 3D printing, epoxy and that kind of stuff. Talk about the hobbies that you have outside the guard.
Obviously I love to do work, woodworking. I'm working on just building my shop out and doing different things. You know, I love the smell of, fresh cut wood. It's amazing. And then, you know, just, you know, integrating wood into other things, you know, 3D printing, all the things that help us build all the tools that we need to do the woodworking. It all kind of falls in, whether it's additive manufacturing or subtractive manufacturing. It all kind of helps out on the passions that you have on this, that I have on the side of woodworking. And they all kind of meld together.
To this point, how many coin racks have you made that are big? We're talking big coin racks, right?
I don't know. I think I made a 6-foot cord rack, I think, was the largest one that I've made. I made an 8-foot flag. But those, I think those are the biggest one. Probably, I don't know, maybe 50 overall. Probably half a dozen whiskey boxes.
Yeah.
A couple of different tables. And
like, for me, it's kind of a relaxing thing. I think wood is a very relaxing medium to work with. For you, what is it about wood?
Yeah, it's just, you know, one, it's the texture of it. It's all different. The looks, I mean, even dramatically different from the time where you take the final piece and you put that final coating on, it can even look dramatically different. But just, I think it's just the creative thing that I like about sitting there working through a project, as frustrating as they can be at sometimes when things go wrong, and they normally do more often than not. But just, you know, working through that problem set and that creative passion that you have to, I took something, and made something completely different out of it.
Well, and on my wall in my office, I have a piece, a very small piece, right? It's not really super thin, but it actually sits on my wall. And I'm trying to remember what you did. You basically cut the veins out of the wood itself. Like, you know, wood has that vein. And it's super cool. And people come in and they ask about it all the time. And I always point and they say, well, Chief Brackett did it. So go ask him how he did it. So
So I built basically took a capacitor out of microwave oven, and it basically takes 40,000 volts, and you put sodium chloride on the wood, and it just kind of burns its way through the pattern in the wood. So you wash it off, scrub it off, and you have this great electrical pattern that's burnt through the wood. That you can leave it as it is, or you know, put epoxy in it and give it some color.
As we kind of close, I mean, you're only a couple years you know, probably still in the job. Mm-hmm. What's kind of the next few years? What's the hope as you're kind of still in the, you'll be in the seat for a little while longer.
For a little while, yeah.
The nice part is you're only about halfway through your tenure, right? Most of these command chief warrant officers are there about 4 to 5 years. And so what's kind of your hopes for the next few years?
So, you know, like everything, you know, accessions and people leaving the service or end of service obligations, it ebbs and flows. So we're going down into a trough. We're losing a little bit of people, and we're working on, continuing to build our cohort, identifying that talent, you know, whether it's earlier in their career and helping them get in the successive assignments they're getting to get them ready to move forward to become a warrant officer, or identifying the talent at the right level and assessing them into the warrant officer. So that's really the biggest thing I have now is, continuing to build that cohort. We've lost a couple of MOSs in the 81st Brigade transformation to the Mobile Brigade, but we also grew a whole bunch more. So we're working over with the RCCC to help identify talent that's coming over that we just don't have the MOS feeders currently in our organization, specifically for air traffic controller, airspace management, the 153 or the 150 alpha positions. We just don't have the feeder MOSs for that now. So we're partnering with both like the 593rd and RCCC to help identify some of those low density the MOSs that we don't currently have available and bring them in as enlisted and then get them into those positions. And then just the normal recruiting effort. And then using technology, Microsoft Power Platforms to help us make better and informed decisions is kind of the other thing that I've really been working for, building out some Power applications to help us better assess and automate processes that specifically for the warrant officer strength manager, managing all the files, that we can do that process automatically.
Yeah, and we give you massive props for the QRR. You were kind of the brainchild of that whole thing. Even the officer career progression, I think that was all you, and I appreciate that, because I think that is a completely amazing tool that I always use every month. I make sure my officers know how to use the QRR, where to find the information. So big applause to you for creating that tool.
Yeah. I mean, that was the intent, is to, you know, help us, especially for the career tracker, to, hey, these are the opportunities that we have. We're working on expanding that and then bringing over the new brigade structure and then linking it to all 54 states and territories so that, if your career ends as, like right now as an ADA officer, it goes all the way through major. But if you wanted to, you could look across all 54 states and territories and say, oh, hey, here's where, you know, a next possible step would be.
That'd be amazing, because there's probably an 04 engineer officer who says, well, hey, there's no 04 engineer battalion in Washington anymore. However, I could just go over to this state, which does have an engineer battalion. So that is fascinating, and I'm excited to see that kind of progression with it. So anything else as we kind of close, Chief?
No, I just, thank you for the pleasure of having me come on and be able to talk a little bit about my career and where I think we're going.
Well, I appreciate you. If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more about how to join the Washington Army National Guard, become a warrant officer, interested in any kind of warrant officer jobs, because once again, they are fantastic, technical and tactical experts, like Chief said, throw a question in the comments, notes, or we'll put it in the notes. That way you guys can go to the website and find that information. Subscribe for future videos. And Chief, I appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks. Always a pleasure.